but about 6 billion people. No doubt we'll agree, this world is our home, not your property, it's the commons, our right of birth. And you would enclose the land all around the earth. Our future is your downfall when we cut this ball and chain. You would sacrifice the public good for your private gain with our sweat we build.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Corporations and Democracy for April 8th, 2021. This is the program that examines how corporations dominate our democracy and what citizens are doing to replace corporate dominance with true democracy. I'm Steve Scalmanini with co-host Annie Esposito. Today we'll be spending the hour with two guests who will give us an update on the prospects for creation of public banks this year. We've discussed public banks a few times over recent years, and momentum has been building, particularly over the last year, to facilitate their creation. One of our guests will be on the West Coast, and that will be David Cobb. David works with the California Public Banking Alliance. It's a coalition of public banking activists in California working to create socially and environmentally responsible city and regional public banks, and coordinating somewhat with the Public Banking Institute. He is also the co-coordinator of the U.S. Solidarity Economy Network. He serves on the Collaborative Design Council of the Transition U.S. organization, and is also on the board of advisors of the California Progressive Alliance. On the East Coast, we'll be speaking with Ruth Kaplan. Ruth is the co-chair of the Massachusetts Public Banking Campaign. She also co-chaired the D.C. Public Banking Campaign in the District of Columbia, and she is also a founding co-chair of the Alliance for Democracy, where she is now vice co-chair and where she has run the Defending Water for Life campaign for many years. So let's look at the prospects for public banks in 2021. David Cobb on the West Coast, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be back with you and Annie and all the other fine folks at KZYXMZ.
Great. And Ruth Kaplan on the East Coast, welcome to the program.
We're glad it's a bi-coastal effort.
And we're going to cover states in between also today.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to be all over the place, just like public banking is right now. So I thought maybe we would start out with some of the advantages to establishing public banks. A lot of people don't know what it is, and even if they do, there's a lot of things that they haven't thought about that make them even more important. And so, Ruth, I wanted you to start. What are some of the main reasons why we need them? And then we'll have David pile on after you mention some of the advantages.
Well, you know, the bottom line is we really need to get our public funds out of Wall Street banks, because what they do is pursue corporate profits, and we want to get our own funds, our tax dollars, into our own banks, where our tax dollars and other revenues are the basis for the bank to make loans to promote the public good. And so what are we talking about, the public good? Things like supporting small businesses, lifting up minority-owned businesses, creating affordable housing and local sustainable food production, building climate-resilient infrastructure, installing renewable energy. And, you know, right now we're really needing to create an equitable path to recovery from the COVID-driven economic crisis we're in right now.
Yeah, okay, so that's all really important economic stuff. And David, what are some of the thoughts you have? What comes to mind immediately when you think about public banks?
Well, at this very moment, what I'm thinking is Ruth Kaplan nailed it. and there's not, I guess I'll just put another spin on it, and that is to really break it down and say public banking is just like private banking, except it's banking on behalf of and for the public interest. And that's not really just a clever play on words. The reality is that private banks are literally owned by the shareholders, and the entire business model is designed to return a profit for the shareholders. As Ruth Kaplan described accurately, public banks are literally owned by the public. They operate for the public, and therefore there is no need for an extractive economy that is a transaction cost. Instead, we have literally, with public banking, democratized finance, which is a profound way to democratize our economy.
Another thing I think of, too, since 2008, is that the public banks are more recession-proof. Do you agree, David?
Well, of course, that's true. The reality is that if you take a look at the 2008 recession, there was and the credit crisis that really rocked the country, the one state that seemed to be immune from that credit crisis, of course, was North Dakota, and of course, you guessed it, the only state in the union with a public bank.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, so there's some evidence right now that it helps during a recession, that there's not the same amount of punishment to the state that has a public bank. And then, Ruth, you were talking a lot about the equitable part of this whole equation, and that would include, you know, what we have right now, where half of Black and Latino households, at least in California, are unbanked or underbanked, and of course we've always had banks doing redlining. So do you see that helping some of the racial problems in this country?
You know, in Massachusetts, and I'm sure out on the West Coast, we're very, very focused on racial equity. We're working closely with organizations like the Black Economic Council of Massachusetts and UGMA and others that are supporting minority businesses. So we're really working hand in glove with them to make sure that when the bank is up and running, that minority businesses get a full opportunity to take advantage of loans from the public bank.
And then, David, I know you've done a lot of work on green things, and the climate is really important to people right now, so would it also help the climate crisis?
Well, absolutely, Annie. And the really the important thing to understand about the climate crisis and all these fossil fuel infrastructures is that even though the scientific objective data is clear, unambiguous, and unassailable that fossil fuel is driving the climate crisis, and by the way, it's not coming, it's here and getting worse. Here in Northern California with the fires, we are beginning fire season, it's really on everybody's mind. So it's crazy that fossil fuel infrastructure continues to be built, and the only reason it's being built is because it is profitable. And therefore, on the short-term thinking, the way capitalism and the private banking system works, it literally is a, quote, good investment. The benefit to a public bank is not only is there no incentive to do fossil fuel, but wait, there's more, because actually you can use the public bank to actually fund climate crisis mitigation, climate crisis adaptation, and climate crisis solutions. So public bank really is one of those win-win-win proposals.
Okay. I think, you know, David is absolutely right, and I think it's very important that in any legislation, this is written in the bill so that there's no question that climate resilience and green infrastructure are going to be part of the loan portfolio of the public bank.
Well, that sure gets my attention, let me tell you, for the two issues you mentioned. One is funding infrastructure for dealing with climate change, and the other is, and simultaneous this year certainly, would be dealing with recovery after the pandemic. There's a lot of funding that needs to happen to save businesses and get them back on their feet, and I sure support that. By the way, back to a few minutes ago, I held back on a little wisecrack, but, you know, the tagline for public banking should be no bailouts required.
Right.
Yeah, I would like to get into that, too, a little bit, Steve, what you're bringing up, because the first thing people seem to say, oh, but isn't that risky? And I'm thinking about who we bailed out.
Yeah, for how many trillion was that?
So we just talked about why it's an advantage to have public banks. So let's get into a little bit about, so how do they work? Ruth, who joins public banks? How do they work?
The public bank is for all the people of the jurisdiction, so you don't have to join. If you're a resident of the area in Massachusetts, it would be a resident of Massachusetts. The public bank is there to serve you and all of the people. Not so much as individual loans, but again, we talked about some of the areas that public banking would support. So loans that will help the community to become strong and resilient. That's really, really important. And it's also important to remember that banks actually create money. Banks create money, and they do that because once they're capitalized, that's the money that just stays there. And once there's deposits, then the bank can make loans. And what we have to remember is the bank doesn't loan out that money. That money just allows it to make loans. You know, that sounds a little like magic or something, but it's the way all banks work. You don't actually loan out the money on deposit. The deposits and the capitalization let the bank make loans. And so banks are actually creating money. I mean, isn't that awesome?
Well, so with the traditional bank, yes, that's certainly true. They're creating debt, but with the public banks, it would be working from the treasury of the district or municipality or state. But wouldn't it also have that magic aspect of debt-based currency?
Yes, exactly. Because, like in Massachusetts, the state legislature would allocate funds for the capitalization of the bank. There's other ways to do it, but that's how we're going to do it. And then the state deposits its funds, our tax dollars and other revenues, in that bank. And so instead of in Massachusetts, where we now have it in investment fund called MMDT, which then uses that as a basis of making loans all around the globe. That money becomes the basis for making loans right in Massachusetts to help all the people of the state.
Uh-huh. Keep the money in the community where you're helping the community instead of China to build to help the shareholders of a big bank and do even more stuff
right. That
doesn't pertain to us. So, David, I was just following up on this a little bit. Do you want to talk about some of the mechanisms in a public bank that are different from the more usual, familiar private banks?
Sure. And, in fact, it gives me the opportunity to get very California-specific and really lift up the cutting-edge law that was passed just before the pandemic hit last year. And that is California Public Banking Bill 857 that actually created a mechanism to allow up to 10 local and regional public banks. So that, Annie, Steve, KZYX, and the listeners, what I'm telling you is California has the ability to create local and regional public banks, not exactly right now, because we are still working with the Department of Business Organization to promulgate the rules associated with it. So, and there hasn't been a public bank chartered in a state in the union in a century. So this is incredibly exciting news. Now, what makes it unique is, and Ruth touched on this, that the 857 bill allows the creation of local and regional public banks, but not for individual banking. There's another bit of legislation that we're working on now that we can talk about if there's time, but 857 is for deposits of local and regional governmental institutions like Mendocino County or the city of Ukiah or a fire district, a school district, could be depositors in such a bank, right? Mm-hmm. And yes, the magic of money creation that Ruth absolutely accurately described, it's called fractional reserve banking. And I'll just take a moment to say I still remember about a decade ago when that was first described to me, I literally thought it was a conspiracy theory. It didn't really. I didn't believe it. I had to actually do the research. And let me just tell y'all, it's absolutely true. Private banks or banks literally create money using a debt-based system. So the point I'm making is when, not if, when we have local and regional public banks, our governments will be depositing the public dollars into those accounts. And Steve, this gets back to your earlier comment. It means that infrastructure projects will be cut, the cost of them, basically in half. And again, the first time I heard this, I said, that really can't be true. But again, look at all the scientific or economic data, all of the studies. It's black and white. It's math. The reality is, public infrastructure projects usually cost about half of the overall cost of them are simply the privilege of borrowing money from these Wall Street banks. It's outrageous, and we will basically eliminate that.
I'm glad you brought up AB 857 in California. We're going to move to the East Coast in a minute, but meanwhile, back here in California, I know Mendocino County several years ago, activists here who are interested in public bank had to put a measure on the county ballot to make Mendocino a charter county so that it could create a public bank, and now AB 857 has done that for us, and that measure failed, by the way. Mm-hmm. So now we have a little head start when the Mendocino Public Banking Group gets fired up again. They have a platform now that they didn't have before.
That's absolutely right, and I would be remiss if I didn't just lift up the fantastic organizing and educating that went on for that charter process. I continue to support that and hope that it will be revisited. And it was a well-run campaign. But you're absolutely right, Annie, that there 857 now says that unincorporated and non-charter or general law cities and counties can participate. And if there are folks in Mendocino who do want to create a local public banking effort, I would encourage you to do so and reach out to us at the California Public Banking Alliance so that you could actually become part of our statewide network, because we don't have individual members. We do have organizational members of the network. And right now, Cooperation Humboldt is the organizational member representing Humboldt to the California Public Banking Alliance. And we would love to help facilitate getting a group going in Mendocino to join the California Public Banking Alliance.
I should slip in that there are 10 regional or cities, regional organizations or cities in the state that are on that list. Now, I'll mention them again later, but just for now, that there are 10 that are working with the California Alliance, I believe.
Yeah, and you really need to group up, I guess, because AB 857 passed, but nobody's created that public bank yet, have they?
They haven't, Annie. And to be clear, that's because we're still working with the Department of Business Organization to promulgate the rules. And as a lawyer, I can tell you there are rules and then there are rules. And I don't mean to be coy, but like we all know this, right? You could imagine creating a set of rules that makes it basically impossible to do something. You can also imagine promulgating a set of rules that make it super easy to do something. And as you can imagine, the California Public Banking Alliance argued, look, it's public banking. The state legislature wants public banks. You should make it easier to create a public bank than normal banks. Wall Street and the Banking Association said, no, it's public money. It's too risky. You should make it harder to create a public bank. And I just want to really lift up and honor the Department of Business Organization played it right down the middle. We're working with them, and they have said clearly and by word and deed are demonstrating the truth that they're saying, public banks are banks. We're not going to make it any easier to create a public bank, but we're also not going to make it any harder. I just want to land on this. That's why it's important that Mendocino gets involved in the California Public Banking Alliance, because the capitalization required, neither Humboldt nor Mendocino nor Del Norte or even Sonoma County on our own have enough public deposits to actually properly capitalize a public bank. But regionally, we could easily have a public bank of the North Coast.
Well, that's great news, and I'm really heartened to hear that the Department of Business Organizations is cooperating, being reasonable. You're giving them a good report. I'm really glad to hear it.
So that we've been talking about 857, which enables public banking in California, but there's a new bill, right, AB 1177, that is different, and it's really being put forward mainly as to help bank the unbanked. Do you want to talk about what's happening with California's Assembly Bill 1177?
Well, Annie, you nailed it, and I'll harken back to some of Ruth's earlier comments, especially around low-income people and people of color who really are being taken advantage of, to put it mildly, by the banking system, and our current economic system is so profoundly exploitative and unfair. AB 1177 actually doesn't create a true public bank in the traditional sense, but what it is a budget allocation which would allow the creation of a fund that would literally be made available to bank the unbanked. So it won't have the magic fractional reserve banking power, and we are intending to move on that as well in the next legislative session. But 1177 deserves our support, and especially because, and I want to really lift up, SEIU, Service Employees International Union, are really driving this. So we're building organizational relationships with organized labor all up and down the Golden State, and a whole host of organizations advocating for policies in the best interest of working people, low-income folks, and people of color and immigrants. So 1177 is a budget allocation that would allow the creation, or would create, a revolving fund to be able to bank the unbanked and underbanked.
Uh-huh. So somebody that depends on payday lenders and all the problems that are around that situation, they could now write checks, have a bank account through this revolving fund.
You got it. You can become a spokesperson, Annie. You really nailed it.
Okay. All right, so we want to get to Massachusetts, and there's a whole bunch going on there. One more thing about here. You were talking about the us rural groups up here getting together, the different counties and so forth. And I suppose we're looking towards Santa Rosa, and Santa Rosa is looking towards San Francisco because that's the big entity in Northern California. So what's happening in San Francisco?
Well, Sanford, remember that there are up to 10 local or regional public banks, and there is a very good-natured but very real friendly competition to see which will be the first public bank. Remember, the rules themselves have not been promulgated, but that has not stopped public banking activists and advocates, because we have folks in Los Angeles and in San Diego and in Oakland/East Bay, and in San Francisco, who are all working to create business plans, who are working to create the mechanism so that as soon as the rules are there, the applications can come in. So my guess is that, I bet it, as we say where I'm from, a dollar to a donut, that one of those four jurisdictions are going to be the first one, but there still is room for those of us in the rural North Coast, as we like to jokingly say, the real Northern California, to our friends in the Bay Area, we should get together and be in the second wave of public bankings and create the first regional public bank.
All right. So now we're going to be bi-coastal, like we talked about before. Ruth, you're connected with Massachusetts Public Banking, and this is a pretty exciting time for you right now. What are you up to?
All right. Well, we have two bills that have been introduced. They're actually the same in the Senate and the House. And these bills establish a state public bank. And they do it by providing for $50 million in capitalization for each of 4 years, so $200 million in capitalization altogether. And remember, the capitalization is patient. It just stays there in the bank. And then deposits will be transferred from where they are now, which is called MMDT. It's a private investment fund. It invests across the country and around the world in all kinds of things that we wouldn't want to see our money invested in, but we have no say. So the deposits, and I won't go into all the details, but the deposits will be transferred from this private investment fund to the public bank once the public bank is established. And one of the things that we felt is very, very important is that there be a strong voice for the public. And we've had a lot of discussion in our steering committee about how to do this, and it's been built into the legislation. First of all, there'll be a public comment portal, and that means that anybody will be able to go up on the web and leave comments, which will then be pulled together and responded to by the chair of the Board of Advisors. And we have an 18-member board of advisors. I can't tell you how much time we spent trying to figure out how to have a board of advisors that was broadly representative of different public interests in the state. And we finally came up with an 18-member board that will represent community development financial institutions, CDFIs, and cooperatives, especially worker-owned enterprises. It'll represent nonprofits, specifically representing underserved neighborhoods. That's where the equity comes in. Small businesses, again, especially for underserved neighborhoods. Sustainable agriculture and food security enterprises are very important on the board of advisors. Organizations promoting climate change amelioration, environmental justice is going to be represented, labor, municipalities. You know, we had an interesting conversation. First, we were actually naming organizations. So we said, oh, well, state AFL-CIO. Then we said, wait a minute, SEIU is not a part of AFL-CIO, and they represent a lot of minority workers. So maybe we should have the SEIU and the AFL-CIO. Well, the way the bill is written now, it would represent both of those factions. And it would also have a representative for municipalities. The bill is set up with a board of directors, and the state treasurer is chair of the board. You know, on the one hand, that makes you nervous. The state treasurer, isn't she just a part of the, it's a she in Massachusetts, by the way, right now, a part of the system. But you have to have buy-in. You have to have buy-in from the system. And so having the state treasurer be the chair of the board and appointing the other members of the board under very specified categories is how it's being set up. The good thing about Massachusetts is we have a two-year session. So the bill has just been introduced by a progressive senator and two progressive representatives, one of whom is a woman of color. So we're trying to start, you know, right out of the gate, having the bank represent our values. And we are now in a very intense organizing phase. So we're working very closely with the community development financial institutions. We're working closely with farmers and food processors and distributors. We are working with small businesses. You know, the other day we had the most wonderful Zoom call with a cooperative called Commonwealth Kitchen. And this organization works with minority small businesses, many, many food trucks. They provide marketing advice. They actually have a kitchen where people can come in and prepare their food. They were so excited about the public bank. It was just like, yes, this is what we're here for. And we're also beginning to do Zoom calls with mayors. We've now done three Zoom calls, and we're working to set up more, because having the mayors supportive of the public bank is going to be very, very important. So that's just a little bit about us.
I guess one thing, listening to that magnificent description, reminds me of another thing about public banks, and that there tends to be a lot of diverse input into the coming about of the bank in question.
Let me take off on that. Go ahead.
When we've done the organizing in the right way, yes.
You mentioned food organizations and the sort of the food chain there. And one thing I didn't hear, but I'm curious, I assumed this would be the bank would be available for funding retail type food, you know, grocery stores and such, in the food deserts that I keep reading about. Is that one of the possibilities?
Well, I think that's going to be very, very important, Steve. We haven't actually used that phrase. It's a phrase I'm very familiar with, especially from my previous work in D.C. So I think that will be very, very important for us. I'm really glad you brought that up.
So we're going to want to move on to the federal level.
I want to slip in two things just about the program in general. If anyone would like to join the conversation in the latter half hour here, the number is 895-2448. That's in area code 707. Again, 707-895-2448. And also I want to slip in that, as listeners locally know, we are in our quiet drive for funding the station. And if you would like the show and would like to contribute, we'd appreciate that. You can call in here at 895-2233 and talk to Renee here. Or you can go to our website, kzyx.org, and just select the big red donate button at the top of the page. And we, of course, would appreciate any donations.
And if you happen to have envelopes and stamps and all that stuff, it's the address for a check, P.O. Box 1, Philo, 95466. So I did want to get onto what's going on nationally in Congress, but first let's spend just a little bit more time on the East Coast, because, Ruth, not only are you involved with Massachusetts, you know a lot about what's going on in New Jersey, Philadelphia, New York. Do you want to give us a little rundown?
Sure, I'd be glad to. There's a lot of campaigns going on. In New Jersey, the governor set up an implementation board, not something to think about it, but to actually implement a public bank. He set it up in the end of 2019, and they have been meeting, I think, monthly. One of the principal people from the Public Banking Institute is on that commission. The state treasurer, as I remember, is chairing it. And so this is a very, very serious effort in moving forward in New Jersey through this commission rather than through legislation. And it's important to remember that the governor of New Jersey is a former Wall Street banker. And so he understands banking, and he understands what a public bank could do for a state like New Jersey. And then in Philadelphia, African-American council member Derek Green introduced the first bill in the country to create a city-owned bank, and it'll focus on racial equity in its financing. So we're very, very excited about that. Philadelphia has been organizing around getting a city public bank for many, many years. So some of this is, you know, it doesn't happen overnight, but this is an exciting culmination of a lot of good organizing there. And then in New York State, they have an assembly bill to create an Empire State public bank. So there's a lot going on the East Coast. And then New Mexico, if we can just go across the country a little bit, has a very, very active campaign. It's had a bill in the state legislature. They're the opposite of us. Instead of 2 years, their legislature meets for like 3 or 4 months. So I don't think they're going to get the bill through this time, but they're getting the issue really out there and discussed. So I think that's really important. And, you know, maybe we should let listeners know also that there's public banking all around the world. And globally, at least 25% of all banks are public banks.
You know, I'd like to come back to that and do some global stuff, but maybe we could slide in a little bit about what's going on in Congress right now nationally. David, could you speak to that? I guess the Squad has passed or has a bill, right? A Public Banking Act?
Yes, there are actually several things, but the thing that we in the public banking movement are most excited about is the bill being introduced by Rashida Tlaib and AOC, because their proposal actually really does double duty. First, it actually creates public money to ensure that local governments, local businesses, and people who do business with public banks would have access to the capitalization required to actually create it. In addition, it creates the mechanisms necessary between the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and the Federal Reserve. It really actually makes the economic stability associated with public banking clear, unambiguous. So it is a let's make sure that public banking works. But the thing that I really want to underscore that is incredibly important, and that is that this particular bill also would put a prohibition on public banks investing in or doing business with the fossil fuel industry. I want to say this again. That bill literally prohibits public banks from investing in or doing business with the fossil fuel industry.
Wow.
So this is the kind of democratization of the finance industry as a matter of general principle, and the kind of public policy that we know has large majority support across political ideology, but because Wall Street frankly controls the ruling interest of both of the two major establishment parties, by taking that progressive stand, we literally can begin to shift the climate crisis.
Wow, so that fits right in with the Green New Deal.
Indeed, that's great news.
Steve, did you have something you wanted to jump in there with?
I had a moment ago, and it slipped from me.
Okay, well, so that's a national level. I guess there is also a national infrastructure bank bill, and then some new postal banking, a new postal banking act. I was going to ask you about postal banks, too. I don't know, David, do you want to say anything about postal banks, something that I think we had in this country once upon a time?
Well, we did. And again, just as Ruth has pointed out how prevalent public banks are, the reality is that in this country, we used to have public banks, and we also used to have postal banking. And postal banking literally was much more about providing banking services for ordinary Americans who could not or did not have the ability to access other banks. And that's what postal banking would do again. Think about how often all of us have a need or a reason to go to the post office. The idea of public banking is to, again, allow the post offices across the country to actually serve as banking locations for retail banking. Again, a way to eliminate the need for those horrific predatory payday lenders. So, again, I'm personally much more excited about public banking that has specific the magic power that Ruth described, the fractional reserve banking. But I also want to acknowledge that postal banking and the just like 1177 here in California, providing services to allow the unbanked and underbanked to have retail banking services is still a very powerful and positive development.
Let me mention the thought I had a couple of minutes ago. You mentioned sort of the magic acronym FDIC. So can you confirm for listeners that a public bank would be backed up just like commercial banks are by the FDIC?
Well, I can tell you that...
It depends on the bank and how it's structured. For instance, the Bank of North Dakota is not, and we're assuming the public bank in Massachusetts will not need FDIC insurance because they're backed up by the full credit of the state itself.
Gotcha.
Okay, and David, did you also have a comment on that?
Yeah, that here in California it would be, because in order to actually pass our groundbreaking legislation, that was actually something that we had to navigate. So Ruth is absolutely correct. It depends on the legislation associated with how you create one. We made the argument that it would not be necessary for the same reasons that Ruth just laid it out. But by the way, that bill originally was an effort to create a statewide public bank, and we ended up with 10 local to regional public banks because that's what we were able to actually get through the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's always that.
And then back to the we were talking about the different states, but then let's take that to the global aspect. Ruth, you mentioned 25%. I saw somewhere a 40% figure that all banks are publicly owned, but it is a huge number worldwide.
It is. I think I've seen many different percents, Steve, but at least 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And going from Germany to Brazil, Russia and China may not be a surprise, but even Canada had a public bank from 1935 to 1971. And it's interesting to look at Germany because there, the public banks date back to the 19th century. And those banks are local folk banks, Volksbank, co-op banks, and they have about 17 million members. And then after World War II, and this is something I think we need to be telling people, the United States, under the German Marshall Fund, set up a public bank, a state public bank, KfW, and it was key to Germany's recovery. So the United States was key in setting up state public bank in Germany. And now Germany also has two national and 17 state public banks and a whole network of local community banks, Sparkasse, and these all work together in a very mutually supportive way. So there are different structures, whether they're community banks or the state banks or the national banks, but they're creating a wonderful web of financing for the people of Germany.
Well, I don't know how much of that their public banking is going to fund their efforts on climate change, but I know they're way ahead of where we are with our economy, and I'm not sure it gets my attention that they are doing so, and I imagine public banking is involved with it.
And besides,
it is very involved, yes.
Let's say besides Germany, Ruth, you're going to take us all over the world here. Public banking is something that made people go, what? But that's not the case in the whole rest of the world. Besides Germany, where else do they have these creatures?
You know, Brazil has quite a network of different kinds of public banks, from ones where people can actually bring credit cards into the local grocery stores to national state. Public banks that I once could have told you a much longer story about Brazil than I can right now, but there are public banks again all around the world.
And Russia, China, I guess.
Yes, that's correct. I just don't have all the details about those banks. I have, you know, more detail about how it works in Germany. And it's interesting that Canada had a public bank focused on development, again, from 1935 to 1971, when conservatives took over and said, we don't need this. But maybe Canada will get back on board again. You know, that would be really good. You know, I'm just wondering if people would like to know a little bit about the Bank of North Dakota.
Well, yeah, that we were going to get to that because that is the model, isn't it?
Yes, and their largest loan portfolio. Let's talk about that in your comments.
Yeah, let me have both of you say something about North Dakota. And Ruth, you started off, so tell us, lay it on us. What is BND?
Bank of North Dakota, started by the farmers in 19, 17, 18, they were getting totally screwed by the banks. They were taking away their farms because they couldn't pay their mortgages, and they were losing their farms. They were losing their homes. And so there were some organizers. It was part of a sort of a socialist movement in the United States and also in Europe. They created something called the Nonpartisan League. And they said, okay, we're not on the Republicans, we're not on the Democrats, we're on our own party, the Nonpartisan League. And I saw an incredible movie about how the farmers organized. You know, you see them threshing their wheat just as the big storms are coming in, and they're going door to door to door talking to farmers about what a public bank would mean. And so they ended up, in just a few years, they took control of the state legislature. They elected their own governor, and they created the public bank. And then the Republicans tried to stop it. They tried to just stop them from being able to sell bonds in order to capitalize the bank. But they overcame that, and they actually set up the bank. And today, the Bank of North Dakota has a balance sheet of $4 billion.
Pretty good.
And yeah, and it is, it has been able to come in and help communities when there's a crisis. The Red River flood in 1997, when 50,000 people were evacuated, and on the North Dakota side of the river, the bank came in and helped the businesses get reestablished. On the other side of the river, it took over a decade to get back on their feet. So,
different,
you know,
state.
The bank was
a different state.
A different state.
Yeah,
right. So the bank was just able to jump in. And another thing that we talk about a lot in Massachusetts, and partly because of the history in North Dakota, is the way the public bank works with local private banks. And it's called participation loans. So the public bank, if a local bank wants to make a loan, but they don't have enough resources, capitalization, to make the loan, they can go to the state bank and say, will you help us? And the state bank will say, well, look, have you done your due diligence? Do you know that this is a good loan prospect? And the public bank says, yeah, we've done it. We know they're good. They're in our community. We know them. They'll be a good loan prospect. And then the public bank comes in and helps with the loan. And the local bank gets what's called the participation fee for all the work they did. And what's happened in North Dakota, and I've been on a call many years ago with local bankers in North Dakota, they haven't been taken over by the Wall Street banks. There are more local banks per capita in North Dakota than anywhere else in the country. That is because of the public bank.
There's some important things that you're touching on there. A lot of stuff like this will involve participation between banks and a local bank and a larger public bank. So there's not really a competition between the regular, quote-unquote, banks and the newer public bank. Let me ask David, too, about how it works. How does our Bank of North Dakota model work? You don't, if you're a North Dakota and you don't necessarily have a bank account at the Bank of North Dakota, do you?
No, I mean, and Ruth really touched on this, but just to be clear, the Bank of North Dakota really functions as a, quote, banker's bank. That means that most of its lending is actually done in partnership with local banks and credit unions. So that's an incredible portfolio that they have. It's, again, the reason that the local banks are so robust in North Dakota. But the one place that they do actually interact directly with consumers, and that is for college and college funds. And so student loans are a part of the Public Bank of North Dakota. Again, this is an example of public banks are a function of a public process, and the political will was there to make student debt or borrowing money for students part of their portfolio. But as it currently stands, the Bank of North Dakota really is about ensuring credit availability for local banks and credit unions.
And my understanding is that student loans is the largest part of their portfolio, and the rate that they go for their students is about half what it is in the rest of the nation.
It's also a recent addition to what the Bank of North Dakota does. So it didn't come, you know, right out in the early days making those kinds of loans.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't until, I think it's about a decade ago that they started making these student loans. And it's because it's a very well-established bank, so they are. And I think it's very important that they're able to do that. But it doesn't mean, for instance, in Massachusetts, that we're going to start talking about making student loans. That wouldn't be wise to do right at the beginning of a bank getting established.
And back to North Dakota, I guess the second category of large loans is home mortgages, another really important people-oriented service.
Yeah.
David?
Yeah, that's right. And again, I agree with Ruth. The reality is that the Bank of North Dakota's portfolio, as it's currently operating, business loans and student loans, but then right behind it, home mortgages and farm loans, right? So, again, this is a function of the political process and the demand. Ruth is correct that the student loan came about 10, 15 years ago. I can't remember exactly the date, but it was because of a particular need and political movement to make that part of the process. Again, for me, I want to be clear, I'd like to treat access to education, including university and college, as a public right, just like we have free school for K through 12. I think that it should be available for colleges and universities. I don't think that there actually should be any need to borrow money to go, but that's a separate political question.
Right. We're getting close to the end of our hour. We have about 4 minutes left, and I wonder if we should jump down to resources and what people can do. You've already talked a little bit about that, but maybe we could talk about websites and authors and things where people could look and kind of slowly so people can write it down if they want. Ruth, you have some ideas about where people could go?
Yeah, the first thing I would suggest is the Public Banking Institute, which covers what's going on around the country. So that's just www.publicbankinginstitute.org. And there is another national organization, a newer one, the National Public Banking Alliance, and they have a website, publicbanking.us. So I think that those two, to begin to get a grounding in what's going on, are very, very important. And then you can go to the state campaigns like ours in Massachusetts. It's just masspublicbanking.org. We're delighted to work with a public banking advocate out in Washington State to set up our website. So we have a lot up on that website. And then each of the individual campaigns, like PhiladelphiaPublicBanking.org, BankingOnNewJersey.org, PublicBankingPA.org. But you can get all those websites if you just go to PublicBankingInstitute.org. So you don't have to write down each of the individual ones. Just go to that main national website, and you can get those links. And then there's a few books. Ellen Brown is like the grand dame of public banking. And she wrote a book, The Public Bank Revolution. The Public Bank Solution. It is a revolution, but her book is The Public Bank Solution, From Austerity to Prosperity. And This is a very good book, you know, sort of for covering a lot of what's going on around the world and the history, all of that.
Okay, I'm gonna cut you off here for a minute because we're almost out of time, and give David a chance to announce a community event that he wanted to, plus tell people how they can, in Northern California, get together. And apologies to the listeners who started calling in when I said there's 3 minutes left. So, sorry. But anyway, you're going to write down what these people are saying, and you can contact them. Okay, David. 1 minute.
And because it's Mendocino, I'm going to actually just give you my personal cell number. Reach out to me at 707-362-0333, and let's get a Mendocino public banking organization up and going so we can get y'all connected with the California Public Banking Alliance. And thank you for the opportunity, because on April 22, that's right, Earth Day, Humboldt State University is partnering with Cooperation Humboldt and the U.S. Solidarity Economy Network and the California Public Banking Alliance and the National Public Banking Alliance and the U.S. Federation of Workers Co-op.
10 seconds.
Okay, we're out of time. I'm going to step on you too. The number is 362-0333 to get a hold of David.